All right, let's go ahead and get started in here. We've got a ton of stuff to cover, and every time I get myself in this kind of situation, I remember being a student at Lipscomb so many years ago, and the assignment, the Bible majors in there, each of us took a particular denomination. We went out and interviewed a priest or a rabbi or some pastor in that denomination, and we wrote a paper about that interview and about the dogmas and the particular teachings of that denomination, and then a refutation of it. And we only had 15 minutes at the end of the quarter. Each of us had about 15 minutes to get up and give a report. And I feel tonight like the guy who walked into that class to give the report on the Catholic Church. Now, you got to understand, he's got 15 minutes to talk about the history and the doctrines and the refutation, the doctrines of all of the Catholic Church. He's an old country boy from Tennessee. And he walked up to the front with a stack of books this high, and I've got this many here tonight, you know, a stack of books. That's what reminded me of this. And Brother Baxter was teaching that class. You know how polished and refined Brother Baxter was. Those of you who knew him, who just thought he ought to always have everything just absolutely perfect. Well, the brother there, he was a country boy, and he walked in there and he had this stack of books, and he just looked at the book, shook his head. He said, "Brother Baxter, do you ever try to put 10 gallons of slop in a 5-gallon bucket?" And that's the way I feel tonight. I have got so much to cover in these next several weeks. I don't know how we're going to do it. Mormons, what do you know about them? Give me just speak out and speak real loud, because Joe's really hard to hear and I'm legally deaf. And so, what do you know? When I say Mormons, what do you think of? Utah. Joseph Smith. What?
Utah.
What?
Utah.
All right. What else? What?
Golden tablets.
Okay. Anything else? 12 apostles, and they still have 12. Okay. What else? What?
Jesus came to America.
Yes. Okay. Next. What else?
They knock on your door.
They knock on your door. Okay.
Young elders.
Young elders.
He had a lot of wives, too,
didn't he? Polygamy. I wanted that one to come up. What about baptism for the dead?
Yep.
You know about that aspect of it? You know about marriage for time and eternity? You'd marry, you know, if you want to have your wife in heaven, wonderful. Just go down to the temple and marry her, and when you get to heaven, in spite of the fact that neither marry or given in marriage in heaven, you can have her up. Oh, by the way, did I tell you, if you want somebody else's wife, get her to go to the temple with you. And if you want several other people's wives, get them to go with you, and in heaven you'll have multiple wives. You know, and so that's a whole part, and that's why we have got so much of this to study. First part of the class tonight, we'll talk about the history of it, and hopefully we'll not have to deal with a lot of it. But the Mormons claim, and when I say Mormons, I'm talking about the Utah Mormons. There are six different Mormon denominations. And so many are not aware of that. The one in Utah, the one in Salt Lake City, the one that Brigham Young really gave birth to after Joseph Smith died. Mormonism might have died, by the way, if it had not been for Brigham Young, because it's an amazing religion. But Brigham Young took the largest group out to Salt Lake City, and it's one of the larger denominations in America or in the world, and it grows fast because they have all of these young men out trying to convert people to Mormonism. But when I say Mormonism, generally I'm going to be talking about the Utah group. They recognize four inspired books. They recognize four inspired books, and one of the books they recognize as being inspired, must be in the back of this one, is that we believe the Bible. And so you may have seen the advertisement on the television about the other Bible. Here's what they say about the Bible in their the Articles of Faith of the Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints. We believe the Bible to be the Word of God as far as it is translated correctly. We also believe the Book of Mormon to be the Word of God. See the real difference? The Bible as far as it's translated correctly. And so when you get in a discussion with Jehovah's Witness, they'll say, well, that's obvious a place where it was not translated correctly. And so you've got to understand that whenever they talk about the other, they believe the Bible, the reality they do not believe the Bible. And let me see if I can just mention a couple of things. You know what city Jesus was born in? You better not ask a Mormon. The Book of Mormon says, prophesied that Jesus would be born in Bethlehem, or pardon me, in Jerusalem. And I've had so many studies with Mormons in New Zealand. I've told them, I'm just so glad that when the wise men came to find baby Jesus, they didn't ask a Mormon. Because the Book of Mormon says he was born in Jerusalem. You remember when he was crucified, how much darkness there was? How long? When Christ died, there was darkness on the earth for how long? How long? 3 hours. The Book of Mormon says there was darkness on the earth for 3 days. And, of course, you know where the disciples were first called Christians, do you not? Do you know that verse? Yeah, that's in Antioch. You ask the Mormon, this is amazing. In 73 B.C., there were Christians on this earth. Do you hear that? And so in America, there were Christians in 73 years before the Christ ever came. I don't know how you get before the coming of the Christ, but it's an amazing thing. And in the latter part of this study, we're going to look at read from the Book of Mormon and read from the Book of Mormon and then read from the Bible and show the contradictions between the Bible and the Book of Mormon. And you cannot even believe, even the Mormon Bible contradicts plural marriages. It's an amazing thing. And by the Mormon Bible, I mean the Book of Mormon. Now, they recognize the Bible. They recognize the Book of Mormon as the inspired Word of God. In fact, this is far superior to this. Book of Mormon is far superior to the Bible in their estimation. So when you get in a discussion with them and start reading to them from the Bible, and they get in trouble, they say, well, you just can't, the Bible just wasn't translated right there, because here's the truth about that matter. Now, there are two other books that they recognize, and let me mention this in passing. These other books, at least the other major book called Doctrine and Covenants, is not recognized as an inspired book by the Missouri Mormons. They're called they're in the Independence Missouri Reorganized. They're called the Reorganized Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints. So you got a Utah group, and then you've got a much smaller you've got a smaller group in Springfield, Missouri. And I believe their number is something like almost 1 million people, maybe less than 1 million members. And so they're rather impressive and everything. Yes, Diane?
Where do the Utah Mormons believe the Book of Mormon came from?
Okay, and that's what we're going to talk about. Where do all of these books come from? And we'll get to that in just another few minutes, where these books come from. But Joseph Smith received, after the publishing of the Book of Mormon, he then got further revelations. And the further revelations are called Doctrine and Covenants. And so there are about 110, we would call them chapters. They call them sections. What? No, I'm sorry. 136 sections that are just other revelations that Joseph Smith got. For example, there was that day when the church arrived together to have the Lord's Supper, and they did not have any fruit of the vine for the Lord's Supper. So they asked Joseph Smith to go and to purchase, the wine for the Lord's Supper. So Joseph goes out and he comes back. And this is from Doctrine and Covenants. I find this really interesting. Here's a revelation given to Joseph Smith, the prophet, at Harmony, Pennsylvania, August 1830, in preparation for religious service at which the sacrament of bread and wine was to be administered. Joseph set out to procure wine for the occasion. He was met by a heavenly messenger. How convenient! And received this revelation, the first four paragraphs of which were written at this time, and the remainder in September following. Water is commonly used instead of wine in the sacramental service of the church. Joseph Smith goes out to try to find some wine to bring back. And so he comes back and he's got a revelation from the Lord. And here's the revelation. listen to the voice of Jesus Christ, your Lord, your God, and your Redeemer, whose word is quick and powerful. For behold, I say unto you, it mattereth not what you shall eat or what you shall drink when you partake of the sacrament, if it so be that you do it with an eye single to my glory, remembering unto the Father my body which was laid down for you and my blood which was shed for the remission of your sins. So he goes out, and fortunately he didn't have to go very far, and so God, the Lord Jesus appeared to him, and he comes back and he says, okay guys, it's all right. It's all right to have water in the Lord's Supper. The most convenient one, and we'll probably spend quite a bit of time on this one, is in section 110. That's one I think I referenced before. And this is the revelation about polygamy. It's not in 110. I've forgotten where it is. It's over near the back of this section. And it is the revelation on polygamy. And so he decides that he wants to have more than one wife. And so one of the longer sections in here is the doctrine about polygamy. And so he gets this special revelation and reveals it to the church. And when it reveals it to the church, obviously it's not received by the people. That's why they were chased all over the country. I mean, Joseph was moved from place to place. We'll talk about that in a few minutes. But in that revelation about polygamy, there's a special chapter in, or special section in there, written to Joseph's wife. Wonder why why Emma had to have a special revelation. Well, he was going to come home and tell Emma, I'm going to marry all of these women. And so there's a section in there where the Lord says to, and here's a special message to Emma. You listen to what Joseph say, it's all right. It's an amazing book to read. That's Doctrine and Covenants. The other book is called Pearl of Great Price. And we'll answer the first part of your question. Joseph found Pearl of Great Price from a traveling salesman. You know, the guy who sold the snake water, is that what I'm talking about? You remember in the Old West, the covered wagons and everything? And so he found one of these travelers who was going around selling things, and he had four mummified bodies. And so Joseph Smith bought the mummified bodies, and lo and behold, it turned out it was a part of a revelation of God. And so you've got the book of Moses, you've got the book of Abraham in this that is called the Pearl of Great Price. They got four books, and there are only three of them that are theirs. One, obviously the Bible, is the one that we would recognize in common with them. Then you've got the Book of Mormon. Then you've got Doctrines and Covenants. And then you've got Pearl of Great Price. Let me just back up, because I started to say this a moment ago, and I probably did not. The Utah group does not recognize Doctrine and Covenants. And so that's rather important to recognize that sometimes you'll see a reorganized Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints, and they're just another denomination of Mormonism. So you've got all of that. History of it. Joseph Smith, born in 1805, okay? At age 17, Joseph Smith, in a section that you'll find in the writings of Joseph Smith, and generally that's included in the in this Pearl of Great Price. And by the way, Doctrine and Covenants and Pearl of Great Price are in the same binding usually. And so in this, Joseph Smith tells of his own story. And so he was doing everything he was trying to figure out what he ought to do. So here's Joseph Smith telling his own stories. He talks about the year that he was born and who his parents were and everything. And he says, sometime in the second year after our removal to Manchester, there was in the place where we lived an unusual excitement on the subject of religion. Commenced with the Methodists, but soon became general among all the sects that were in the region of the country. Indeed, the whole district of country seemed to be affected by it, and great multitudes united themselves to create no small stir and division amongst the people, crying, "Lo here," and others saying, "Lo there." Some were contending for the Methodist faith, some for the Presbyterian faith, some for the Baptist faith. And so Joseph Smith said, I was at that time in my 15th year. During the time of this great excitement, my mind was called up a serious reflection and great uneasiness. And so in the process of time, my mind became somewhat partial to the Methodists, and I felt a desire to be united with them. My mind was greatly excited at times, and the Presbyterians were most decided against the Baptists and the Methodists and used all their powers and wisdom and sophistry. So he said, in the midst of this war of words, I often said to myself, what is to be done? Who of all of these parties are right and who are wrong? If any of them be right, which is it and how shall I know? And so while I was trying to figure this out, Joseph Smith said, I read James 1st chapter and 5th verse, which says, if any of you lack wisdom, let him ask of God. And so Joseph Smith said, I prayed, and the Lord sent a message to me that says, don't join any of them. And so he doesn't join any of them. And now at age 17, there is an angel by the name of Moroni, M-O-R-O-N-I, Moroni. What? It's Moroni, and his father's name, Moroni's father's name was Mormon. So if you want to know where this comes from, and Moroni appears to Joseph Smith, he's now 17 years of age, and he's in the state of New York. And there was revealed to him that on a mountainside, just outside of the city in New York where it was found, there were some golden plates, and they're hidden under a rock, and Joseph Smith, go look for them. And so Joseph Smith went out in 1823 and opened up the ground and pulled up the rock, and he found the Book of Mormon. And it was written, by the way, in Reformed Egyptian. And that's rather significant because these books allegedly came from the Jews who were in America. And we'll talk about how the Jews got to America. And by the way, you may not know that the Garden of Eden was in Missouri. You know, I mean, that you got to understand that. And when I ask a Mormon, how on earth, when Joseph Smith gets out to Missouri, and he said, look, we're here, it's the Garden of Eden. And the Lord's going to come here and in this generation build a temple here that'll be the rival of the temple of Solomon. You know, I mean, it's going to really be amazing. It's going to happen right here. It's going to happen in this generation. We're right here in the Garden of Eden. So I asked the Mormons I studied with, how on earth do you get from the Garden of Eden with Adam and Cain and Abel and Enoch walking with God in America? And how do you get them, you know, how do you get to the other side of the world? And they say, oh, the flood. So Noah gets in the ark, and during the time of the flood, he goes all the way over, and the ark lands in Turkey, on Mount Ararat in Turkey. And so they got out, and when I said to the Mormon elders, what about that Tigris and Euphrates River? The book of Genesis says the Tigris and Euphrates rivers were a part of the river that came out of the Garden of Eden. And they said, oh, well, whenever Noah got out, he says, you know, that just looks like the Tigris back over there where we came from. And so he renamed those rivers over there, but the Tigris and Euphrates River used to be out in Missouri. And so Joseph digs up these plates, and he's not allowed to open them at this time. And so let's see, he asked, on September 22nd, 1823, Joseph Smith saw the plates and was forbidden to move them. He returned September the 22nd in 1824. He was not allowed to remove them. 1825 and was not allowed to remove them. And 1826 and was forbidden until September the 22nd, 1824. So now he digs up these golden plates and he starts translating the words that are on this golden plate. Now there are two stories about how all of this happened, but the story that is, and it comes out of Mormonism, is that when he found the golden plates, inside the golden plates were two peep stones, P-E-E-P, peep stones, called the Urim and the Thummim. You recognize those words from part of the stones that were used by the priest? And so he's got the peep stones that he calls the Urim and the Thummim. So Joseph Smith gets into this room and he puts a bed sheet across the room. And so he's got the golden plates. He puts the stones inside a hat. And he looks inside the hat, and there is this reformed Egyptian character. It's talking about a letter. And right beside it is the English word. And sitting on the other side over there is a secretary who writes down the very words that Joseph Smith calls out. And so that's how we get this Jewish language that's written in Reformed Egyptian. And why they're written in Reformed Egyptian, I do not know. And they're written in Reformed Egyptian. And so he translates this. And so he translates 116 pages of it. And he carries it to a professor by the names of Charles Anthon in Columbia College, and also to Dr. Samuel Mitchell of New York, and to make sure that the translation is right. And so, in June, this was in June, Harris, the scribe on the other side, he had transcribed 116 pages of the manuscript that later became the Book of Mormon. And would you believe it, he took them home to show them to his wife and lost them. So the angels got upset at him. Moroni got upset at him and came and took the golden plates away from him for a while just as punishment. So now then he goes back and he finishes the writing of the Book of Mormon. Now, the Book of Mormon is an amazing book because it tells of where the American Indians came from. The American Indians came from two places. There was a boatload of them that came from the Tower of Babel. Came from the Tower of Babel whenever God confused the languages. And I'm going to read to you tonight, if we have time, the divinely inspired story about a fellow by the name of Jared, who built an ark that allowed him to sail. Remember how they got in the ark from Missouri and went all the way back over in Noah's day at the Tower of Babel? That's in, you know, the flood is Genesis chapter 6, 7, and 8, and 9. Genesis 11, at the Tower of Babel, there's a fellow by the name of Jared, and he gets in a boat and sails all the way back to America. Isn't that just remarkable? And he arrives here, and he and his family, and they settle in America. They start fussing and fighting. And this, you know, I don't know what date you give to the Tower of Babel, maybe 2,200 years before Christ. It depends on what chronology you use. But they settle in America, and the amazing thing is how smart they are because they make weapons out of steel. How does that fit in your understanding of when steel was made? You know, and you would think that somewhere in all the work that archaeologists have done, they dig up some rusty, at least some old steel swords or something. And it doesn't bother them at all whenever you say, where's the evidence of this? And all the rest. It's really, really amazing about that. I want to read some of that to you tonight. It's a rather interesting story. But those guys die out. They populate America. And so, right as they die, the last of the individuals who is alive writes down the story of Jared. And when he writes down the story of Jared, he puts them on a hillside in New York. Isn't that amazing? They were not a part of... And then later, they were discovered by the next group of Jews that come to America. Let me back up. See, we got the same picture now. Where's the Book of Mormon come from? Moroni, the son of Mormon, tells Joseph Smith in 1823, I'm going to tell you about which church you ought to join. None of these churches. And go, here's this gold plate, and they'll answer all of your questions. And so he goes and looks at them for 5 years, and finally he brings them out, and he translates them, and they become the Book of Mormon. Now, in this are the story of two migrations of people from the Bible world over to America. And so the first one happens at the Tower of Babel. The other one happened at the time of the Babylonian captivity. And almost all of the Book of Mormon concerns those individuals who came from the Babylonian captivity, from that period of time. You remember Nebuchadnezzar came in three different times to destroy Jerusalem. It's about 589, I think that's the date, about 4 or 5 years before the final destruction of Jerusalem, that they get in a boat and they come to America. And they leave and they arrive in America down in the Yucatan, down in that part of Mexico. And now we got to get those plates from Mexico all the way up to New York. Well, Joseph Smith doesn't have any problems with that. I mean they're there, and this is 500 BC, nearly 600 BC, they live there, and they're the good guys and they're the bad guys, and we'll talk some more about those as we talk more about the story of the Book of Mormon. But they're the good guys and the bad guys, and they're fighting each other. And it's during this period of time that they have another person that comes from the Bible lands all the way over to America. His name is Jesus. If you've ever wondered what Jesus did during the 40 days after his resurrection, you know, he was raised and then it was 40 days before he ascended into heaven. Much of that time he came to America. And he came to America and he established the church in America. And he appointed 12 apostles. And he did something rather similar to what Jesus did to Peter. You remember Jesus said to Peter, "What if I will that he tarry till I come? What is that to thee?" Well, when he gets to America, Jesus does it even better, and he promises three of the apostles in America that they never will die. And so you can ask these Mormon elders, if they know Mormonism, where are these guys? You know, if he came to America, where are they? And what I said is, do they shop at Walmart? Surely somebody will have seen these guys that are, they got to buy groceries from somewhere. I'm mocking it, but I'm trying to be kind, but I'm trying to be honest. And it is amazing to talk to one of these young elders and everything and see where they are in relationship. This story doesn't bother them at all, that somewhere. And so I said, seriously, guys, where are they? Well, we believe they're up in the North Country. And that was as specific as they would be. So I'm not sure exactly where they are, but if you guys ever go up north, just look and see if you can find some real old folks up there, all right? They're up in the North Country. And so Jesus comes to America, and he sets up the church here in America. And just like he set the church up over in the over in the Bible world and established the church over there, in that 40-day period, he accomplishes in 40 days in America what it took him 3.5 years to accomplish over there in Palestine, and selects apostles and everything, and so Jesus starts the church. Now, what happened was the church faded off of this earth. And so the church ceased to exist in the Bible land and even here in America, because the bad guys that came from the Babylonian captivity killed all the good guys. Oh, I didn't tell you how they got to New York, did I? Right near the end of the battle, you know, after they've been fighting for 300 or 400 years, the good guys against the bad guys, the commander-in-chief of the good guys goes to the commander-in-chief of the bad guys. The good guys are the Nephites, the bad guys are the Lamanites. And the good king of the Nephites says, "I'm having trouble winning this battle." And this other general, what a benevolent kind of person he was, he says, what do you want to do? And he says, "Could we move to New York?" And so they transverse all the way from the Yucatan down in Mexico, if they've migrated any way north at all, and they transverse 1,000 miles to get up to New York, so they can win, so that it'll give the good guys a chance to win the battle. And guys, I'm not stretching this at all. I mean, this is the story of the Book of Mormon. And so they're up there fighting, and they're writing down the stories about how all of these things happen, one after another, after another, after another. And, you know, and there'll be this king, and he'll his son then will become king, and he'll fight these battles, and then he'll die, and he'll fight these battles, and he'll die, and he'll fight these battles, until you get right down to the last, and there's a man by the name of Mormon. And so Mormon writes down on these gold plates all of the Book of Mormon. In the midst of all of that, Moroni also takes those gold, and that's Mormon's son, takes the all of the writings that came from the Jews who came over from the Babylonian captivity, and puts with that the writings that were found by his people that were about the people who came from the Tower of Babel. And so what you have here in the Book of Mormon is the story of the origin of the American Indians. And so that's sort of where they came from. And if you really want to know all about that, and Jesus came to America and all the rest. Now then, here's the Book of Mormon. The Mormons, and I cannot believe they did this, published a photostatic copy of this first edition. And so in the preface of this first edition, you have got words from the printer. It was not uncommon in old books for the printer to put a memorandum in the front of a publication of a book. And so he says, here's what the printer says about the manuscript. He says, the size of the page was agreed upon, and an estimate of the number of M's in a page, there'd be about 1,000. A page of manuscript would make more than a page of printed matter, which proved to be correct. The contract was to print and to bind with leather 5,000 copies for $3,000. When the printer was ready to commence the work, Harris was notified. He's the scribe who lost the first copy of the books and then brought the others in. And Hiram Smith brought the first installment of manuscripts, 24 pages, held it under his vest, and his vest was closed tightly and buttoned over. At night, Smith came and got the manuscript, and with the same precaution, carried it away. Didn't want anybody to be able to alter the manuscript. So they brought it in the morning, and Smith picks them up at night. On the second day, Harris and Smith being in the office, I called their attention to a grammatical error and asked whether I should correct it. Harris consulted with Smith a short time and turned to me and said, "The Old Testament is ungrammatical. Set it as it is written." Now, if you want to read and understand the lack of education that Joseph Smith has, you need to read this first edition. It is an amazing thing that you'll find in this book. Mike, you're right here. I just want you to read the first words of every paragraph. Just start anywhere in here, and where there's a paragraph, just read the first words of every paragraph.
And it came to pass.
All right, go to the next paragraph.
And it came to pass.
And go to the next paragraph.
And it came to pass.
And go to the next paragraph.
And it came to pass.
And go to the next paragraph.
And it came to pass.
And go to the next paragraph.
And it came to pass.
Go to the next paragraph.
And it came to pass.
And it came to pass. And in there, I've counted. I just took one book to see how many times that is the way he begins every paragraph in this. Let me see, I got over here, and this is from the first book of Mormon, and I don't know if I went all the way through it. In the first, in the Book of Mormon, the last time I have it numbered is 194 times in 5 chapters of the Book of Mormon. And so he brings it in, and so he says, well, what about this? And the grammar in this is... It lacks a lot. He'll put a singular subject and a plural verb. It's an amazing, an amazing thing. So let me continue to read this. Martin, let me just mention, by the way, that on the page of the Book of Mormon, and you'll find this in all of the editions of the Book of Mormon, there is a title page. I hope it's in all of them. And it is a certification of three witnesses. And this is to authenticate the Book of Mormon. And it's signed by Oliver Cowdery, David Whitmer, and Martin Harris. Harris is the one who lost 116 pages. And so here is the testimony by three witnesses. And the three witnesses says, "We saw the Book of Mormon." All three of these guys left the Mormon church. They saw the gold plate. But when Joseph Smith was finished with them, the angel came and took them away. So we don't have some way we lost those original 24 gold plates. Here's what the printer says. Martin Harris was in the office. And when I finished setting up the testimony of the three witnesses, that's which I just abbreviatedly read to you, Harris, Cowdery, and Whitmer, I said to him, "Martin, did you see those plates with your naked eye?" Martin looked down for an instant, raised his eyes up and said, "No, I saw them with a spiritual eye." You read the testimony of these three witnesses, we were eyewitnesses, we saw all of these gold plates. Now then, let me read to you about those who left. And don't ring the bell. Let me know when I got 5 minutes, okay? I got to get this to you. It's in the book of Ether. And it's Ether. It's not Esther. It's Ether. You know what Ether does. This is probably the one chapter in the book that is most interesting. And now Moroni writes the beginning part of it, proceed to give an account of those ancient inhabitants who were destroyed by the hand of the Lord upon the face of this north country. And I've taken my account from the 24 pages that were found by the people of Limhi, which is called the Book of Ether. And so he writes these things down. And it's about a fellow by the name of Jared, Jared came forth with his brothers and their families and some others and their families from the great tower at the time the Lord confounded the language of the people. So now we've got this 2000 B.C., 2200, 2500 B.C., maybe even farther back than that to get to the Tower of Babel. More than that, but, 2500 years B.C. And so Jared is instructed by God to go and to start traveling. And so they leave the place that they are and they go into a distant land. They care of their flocks with them. And they also laid snares and caught fowls of the air, and they did prepare a vessel in which they did carry them the fish of the waters. They got the fish inside the boat in this one. And they also carried with them Deseret. The name of their publishing company is Deseret. You know what Deseret means? They also did carry with them Deseret, which by interpretation is a honeybee. Anybody ever been to Salt Lake City and you've seen their building out there? It's in the shape of a honeybee nest, And so he gets this boat ready, and so God gives him some instructions. And the Lord did not, by the way, confound the language of Jared. Otherwise, they would not have been able to build the boat. And so here is the description of the boat. And the Lord said, and compare this to Genesis 6, make an ark of gopher wood. Go to work and build after the manner of barges which you have hitherto built. And it's the other barges where they had the fish on the inside. And it came to pass that the brother of Jared did go to work and also his brethren, and they built barges after the manner which they had built according to the instruction of the Lord. And they were small and they were light upon the water, even like the lightness of a fowl upon the water. You see what it looks like? A duck swimming on top of a pond is the picture I get. And listen to this vivid description of it. They were built after the manner that was exceedingly tight. Even they would hold water like a dish. And the bottom thereof was tight like a dish, and the sides thereof were tight like unto a dish, and the ends thereof were peaked, and the top thereof was tight like unto a dish, and the length of them was the length of a tree. And the door thereof, when it was shut, was tight like a dish. It came to pass that the brother of Jared cried out to the Lord, saying, O Lord, I've performed the work that you've given me. And I've built these barges, and behold, Lord, in them there is no light. You can go ahead and ring that first bell if you like. Okay, David. And he said, behold, there is no light. Whither shall we steer? And also we'll perish, for we cannot breathe. Why? You got inside a thing that the sides and the top and the bottom and the doors are tight like a dish. You're in trouble. And so he says, Lord, did you forget something? We don't have any light in here. And we don't get it, cannot get any air in here. And we won't know how to steer. And also we'll perish, for in them we cannot be. Save for the air which is in them, therefore we shall perish. God's solution. You ready? The Lord said unto him, to the brother of Jared, behold, thou shalt make a hole in the top. Will that work? Sounds like it would. Wait a minute, there's more. And also in the bottom. And when thou shalt suffer for air, thou shalt unstop the hole and receive air. And if it so be that the water come up on thee, behold, you shall stop the hole that you do not perish in the flood. And so they got this stopper, and they got a hole in the top and a hole in the bottom. And when the water comes up on them, in my picture, if it flips the thing over, I'm trying to be relatively fair about this, that you got to uncork one and cork the other one. Brother G.K. Wallace said at Free Harmony years ago, they came all the way to America pulling and a plugging. And so here they come all the way to America. And when they arrive in America, there are the good guys. And Jesus makes, not Jesus personally like he did in the 40 days when he came, but Jesus comes and Jesus says things to he appeared to them and he says, behold, I am Jesus Christ. I am the Father and the Son. How does that sound to you? Behold, I am the Father, I am the light and the life and the truth and the world. Jesus says, I am the Father. And so when you get to the end of the book of Ether, let me get over here to the end chapter over here. In chapter says, he saw that there had been slain by the sword already nearly 2 million of his people. And he began to sorrow in his heart. I think you would after 2 million casualties. And yea, there had been slain 2 million of mighty men and their wives and their children. He began to repent of the evil which he had done. He began to remember his words. And he writes this epistle down. And there are only two guys left, and then they commit mutual suicide, or maybe one kills the other, and then the men commit suicide. That's the introduction. You can go to David's class next week if you want to, I'm telling you. But it is an amazing religion, and the half has not yet been told about it. And so talk to me afterwards. Any questions you want me to include in this, anything you've ever heard about it, we'll try to deal with it and everything. But we got all the way to America, at least in the first boatload. That's it. Thank you very much.